everyone. Welcome to the Nursing Insights Podcast. My name is Stephanie, and I'm a registered nurse practicing in the state of New Jersey. Getting right to it, the state of healthcare right now is tough, to say the least. Let's just say that the nursing shortage does not spark joy. We can sit in that and stew in it for a while, but we can't live in it forever. Things are changing. So join me as your host as I partner with the New Jersey Collaborating Center for Nursing to hear from nurses across the state about their experiences, trials, and triumphs in the nursing profession.
In this episode, we're continuing our conversation with Anne Alonzo, the Director of Nursing for Long-Term Care at Christian Health in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Let's get started.
And for folks who have maybe never been to long-term care or have no or limited experience with long-term care, how long is long-term care? Like, what kind of ranges might you see a patient be staying in long-term care for? What type of time ranges?
So it varies. Long-term care, sometimes this is going to be their home, but there are some that, like I said, it's case by case. For example, in a subacute, we established that the patient is not safe to go home, to go back home living on her own. So other options will be offered. There's independent living, there's assisted living, and there's long-term care. I will say that if the family choose to be in long-term care, most of the time, this is going to be their home. And there are some that try out long-term care, and then some family will be like, oh, I could see dad in assisted living. So we help transition them to an assisted living, which the beauty of assisted living is that you're like living in your own apartment, in your own unit with a safety net of a nurse and a CNA around the clock. So you call them when you need them. But in long-term care, of course, all the care are provided by us.
I see. So for everybody differentiating out there, it's assisted living is somebody who has a safety net, but is slightly more independent versus somebody who's correct. Long-term care, which is going to receive the majority of their activities of daily living with assistance.
Correct.
And then for you as a nurse or for nurses who are considering going into long-term care, what kind of skills might they be developing differently than somebody who is in an acute care setting?
Like I said, the evolution of healthcare, I feel like the hospitals are the new ICU. The subacute is like a hospital. We're getting nephrostomy, new pacemaker, we're getting dialysis patient, new Foley, new tube feeding. There's a lot of acuity that could be learned. And then when they transition to long-term care, they're maintaining that acuities. So there's a lot of skills. And the one thing that they will really enhance in long-term care is time management. And because you have your medication pass, you have your treatment pass, you have your documentation, and in between, there's carrying out of orders, calling the doctors for labs. Overall, it's not just learning a machine, but really the holistic providing everything, and the communication to the family and, you know, the care team is the most important part that they could learn. Enhancing their time management, enhancing their communication, building the relationship with the interdisciplinary team and the family and the patient. And really, it's like I said to you, it's not just because you're dealing with what's acute or what's physically happening to the patient. It's really emotionally and mentally, you know, listening to them and healing them.
And especially with the dynamic of being able to get to know patients for a longer period of time, being able to build up that relationship, I'm sure some of the stories and experiences you have working in long-term care are different than what we might see in an acute care or a home care setting. Could you maybe share a story with us about some experiences you've had or a warning experience you've had working in long-term care as a DON?
We got a patient that is status post stroke. So like had a trach, not in this facility, but it's just, you know, one of my most beautiful experience as a leader in leadership. A family came to us. It's a step down after being in a post-acute. So came to us with a new trach. Actually, the trach was already capped. So aphasic, new tube feeding, multiple pressure ulcers, and just max assistance. And prior to this, this guy was driving independent. So it was very hard for the family, and you could see every day, it was a struggle to see them in the room. And there's a big part is in denial. So they said that, oh, this is the setup at home. You know, he could use a walker to go to the bathroom, or we could put a commode by the bed. The patient is bedbound, like non-weight bearing. So they're talking about something that is far from happening. This is New Year's Eve. This is December 31st. We're getting the patient and we're establishing discharge date, just so you know, because that's part of a regulation that you establish your discharge plan, discharge date, you know, within a certain amount of hours being or days being admitted in a subacute. So the family is like, oh, this is our setup. We have a room at the, like the basement, and he's going to live with my mom, and we have a bathroom there, and he needs to be able to use a walker to go to the bathroom, or he needs to be able to transfer himself from the bed to the commode by the bed. And you just like sit back and we're like, how are we going to do that? Right. So as a team, you try your best to feel for the family, one, hear them, validate their feelings. And after that, of course, you have to lay out what's reality. And the reality that was in the beginning, we were like, we have to plan that if he's not able to do all of that, is mom going to be able to support him? Is mom going to be able to transfer him to the toilet or transfer him from bed to the wheelchair to the commode by the bed? And we're like, no. And when there's different kids involved too, like not just one kid who's making a decision, it's a challenge. But then as a team, meaning with your social worker, with your therapist, you put your minds together, you put your heart together, and you'd be like, okay, this is what we need to accomplish first. The first thing really is that, and the biggest denial is that he can eat. At the moment, he's, oh, my dad loves cheeseburger. Like he has a good appetite. So now he's a tube feeder. And now he just came off from being extubated. There's a lot of factor. We can just like, okay, let's try. So the first thing is to make sure we get from when we receive him with a cap trach is to start having also the speaking valve, working with the respiratory therapist, right? And then weaning him off with the tube feeding. So those factors that, you know, you need to slowly do. Oh, on top of that, this patient came with a UTI, so acute infection. So an antibiotic, IV antibiotic. So, you know, the first goal, you address the acute problem. Let's make sure the infection, you know, we resolve the infection first. And then you work on your long-term goal. It was a long journey. It was, I would say, more than a month, but I will say still shorter than what you expect. And he walked out that facility with a speaking valve, no tube feeding, resolved pressure ulcers. And yes, it is extensive assist, but it's not dependent. It's not maximum assist. When he left the facility, like everybody was crying because this man wasn't talking. This man wasn't walking. And he wasn't walking when he was leaving, but he's able to transfer himself. So yeah, long journey. Yes, he needs to continue to do outpatient. He needs to continue to deal with the respiratory therapist. But he was away. He could communicate and it's just amazing.
That story just gave me chills. That was just beautiful. And in a month, it's like you said, it's both a long journey and a short journey in the sense of like how much change can come about through really specialized, really intensive, really attentive care for a month. So, I mean, that family must have been overjoyed as well to see the kind of progress. And that is really something you wouldn't get in other settings. That's a setting that requires that kind of support, but again, is a long-term care setting rather than an acute care setting. The types of patient interactions, the type of patient relationship that you would build is a very different place than versus like I grew up on a med-surg floor and I would have patients for 3 days and then maybe never again. It's a really different type of relationship it sounds like you're building. And then also with the families, depending on different facilities. You know, I worked in places where the visiting limit was to a certain, you know, number of people per day or a certain number of people per time period. In long-term care, it seems like the family might be much more involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes like we had a Christmas, the holiday just, you know, happen and there's like lots of family. Sometimes there's party of this. And, you know, we just have to like plan and accommodate them in a more private area. And it's good to see.
And in some ways that also just spreads your impact because you're not just affecting one person in your hospital bed. You're affecting an entire family unit, which does happen regardless of where you are in the nursing care spectrum. Like yeah. You are helping a whole family, but the level of relationship and the level of involvement is different when you have that type of longer term communication.
Yes, that is. Yeah. You know, part of your fulfillment is like, You get to love the patient and you get to love the family.
And something else that you had mentioned earlier is also that you had the clinical interest of behavioral health. Is that still something you get to engage with?
Yeah, so in Christian health, you know, we call it Heritage Manor East is a long-term care and subacute, and we have a specialized behavioral unit also here. They are the one that has really a diagnosis of psychiatric illness that we provide special activities, structured day for them. And my first exposure in long-term care, I also work in a facility that has that, like specializing in behavioral. And it is, how do I describe it? It's not just fulfilling. It's just, they're just fun to be with. You spend 5 minutes with them. It's like their whole world. You just, you know, talk to them. It changed them.
For folks who've never been kind of in the behavioral health realm before, myself included, what would be some of the differences you might find between an acute care behavioral health unit versus a long-term care or acute subacute care behavioral unit?
So they're more stabilized, right? They will still have moments or they will still have their episodes, but they are more high functioning, meaning with interaction, with social interaction, they're more the quality of life. You could engage them with activities. You know that the medication that they're on is already on like a therapeutic level and they're stable. And if there's anything that trigger, it's just really an episode.
So for the patients that you'd be working with, some of them are going to be residential for the long term, and then some that would be in the subacute area, would they still be looking to transition out back into the community?
Yes, the subacute area, yes. Transition to the community, depending on their progress, transition to the community or like the different setting that I mentioned, assisted living, long-term care. So depending with the behavioral unit, some of them is going to be living there, long-term care, or they could transition to long-term care, like the other section, not the specialized behavioral unit.
So having not really had so much of a background and experience in psych for myself, I'm curious, I could imagine what kind of goals you might set for somebody who has gone with maybe an infection from acute care setting to subacute to back out into their home or into the community. For somebody who has a behavioral health concern, what kind of goals might you see for somebody who's going to be in your subacute or your long-term care setting in terms of like nursing goals or nursing care plan?
It's really managing their behavior in terms of what are their triggers. For you to use a psychotropic medication, you need to have, or so antipsychotic, you need to have target behaviors. So in that, having them in the behavioral unit, which is a structured unit, you get to learn their routine and their behavior and what are their triggers. And also what are the behavior that you're focusing on? Let's say one patient has issue with personal space. That's her trigger, or that's his trigger to have an episode. So it's one thing that, you know, they're being followed by psychiatrists, psychologists, and, you know, you discuss the plan of care for this patient to the staff to make sure we maintain her personal space so that she'll be, her behavior is managed and she could be engaging in activity and having that quality of life the family really wanted to see. Just to be able to be part of like a group activity, that's already a goal. Part of a goal of a patient that is in a behavioral unit, engaging them so that they maintain that interaction and they're not isolated and having that quality of life, meeting their basic needs of properly finishing their meals, taking their medications that will stabilize their mood. That's already setting the goal for them.
So what might a nurse who's looking at maybe specializing in behavioral health, you know, what kind of skills or practice might they develop while working in a behavioral health unit in a subacute or long-term care?
Oh, you could get acuity in a behavioral unit that you could still get Foley's, you could still get tube feeding. One thing that a trait of somebody who wants to work in a behavioral unit is like really be patient about having that patience on and having that calm approach, but it's really, really like working with them and building the trust. That's number one in nursing, in psych, you know, well, in every setting, but in behavioral, that's big. If you say that, okay, I'm gonna be back here at 2 o'clock to help you with certain thing, you have to make sure that you'll be back a certain, like on the dot or before 2 o'clock. It's just, that's one thing that you wanna establish right away when you're in a behavioral unit, the trust.
trust key in any nursing relationship, certainly, but it sounds like in behavioral health even more so. Those are all wonderful experiences you shared. I'm so thankful for your sharing of your wisdom and your insight. Are there any other things you'd like to share about your experiences, whether as a DON or throughout your history and career as a nurse?
What I will say is that, like I said, you chose this path or this career because you want to take care of people and you want to make a difference, right? One day at a time. And you have to embrace the journey, meaning it's not going to be butterflies and roses every day. It's not. You could be a bedside nurse. You could be an office nurse. You know, you could be, you know that it's not going to be a smooth flowing day every day, but don't give up and learn from your mistakes. Embrace the bad days. Your calling is something that you'll never know what's your impact to the other person, meaning the patients and the family. You'll never know, right? When they go home, you'll never know. But knowing that you provided the safe and highest quality of care that you provided to them, and you saw the progress of the patient, that's already like a very fulfilling reward of what you did. Sometimes, I talk to the family and they still talk to their nurse, 2 years ago, but you'll never know that. But then it doesn't matter. You're not here to get an Oscar award. You're here to make a difference. You're here to heal and be part of a healing of your patients and the family emotionally, mentally, physically. But you could also be part of your team members' growth or healing. You'll never know what the other nurse is going through. So maybe coming to work and helping her or supporting her or making the work environment positive, you're already touching somebody's lives. Embrace everything in between, and you are where you're meant to be. You are.
I want to ask about one of those comments you just said at the end there, where you said making your workplace an enjoyable place to be. What do you think are some of the ways that you feel like nurses can come back into their workplace and make it a positive place to be, whether it's from the DON position or a floor nurse position who just started?
I think teamwork and really communication and support help build that environment, like the positive one. And it's not a one-person job. You take care of people. You need your CNA to assist you. You need the social worker to assist you with the family. It's always going to be a team effort. It's always going to be in collaboration with. You're not alone. That is one thing that everybody, like the nurse and the nurse's aide, should know in long-term care. Just because you have a specific assignment, it doesn't mean you're going to take care of it alone. There's a lot of people to support you. Like I said, communication from leadership to the floor nurses, the line staff is very important. And it's a very important relationship to build as well. That bad days, that you're not alone.
One of the things I remember, because I worked as a wound care nurse, one of the things I was hearing in one of the updating continuing education courses was that how we use a clock face for, of course, like talking about where things are on the body, like what direction tunneling is, might be at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. One of the things I've been hearing is that the new generation doesn't use analog clocks anymore. So by the time your son, if he ever wants to consider nursing school, or some of the younger generation, we might have to come up with a new metaphor for how to position things, because nobody uses clock. So it really is like every generation comes in with their own set of knowledge, and it's a new set of language terms as well.
Evolution of technology.
Yes, and the evolution of technology. That's actually another question. Do you see in the long-term care or in the subacute care setting some of this evolution of technology that we see a lot within healthcare?
We're actually starting to explore, like when you go to conventions, be it long-term care, assisted living, it's everywhere, right? A lot of vendors introducing AIs, a lot of vendors introducing this, high-tech bed or repositioning mattresses. So yeah, there's a lot. And I could see that it will help. It will help with, the current challenge right now, meaning it will help with addressing staffing, those monitoring, AI monitoring. One day, yeah, it will be a different world. But yes, it's absolutely being introduced to long-term care and subacute.
That's so cool. And what an interesting thing to look forward to, really. The evolution of technology is crazy. One of the questions we'd like to close out with, how is it that you like to take care of yourself? Because sometimes it can be a very taxing job to be out in the nursing workforce. But, you know, like you're saying, we're out making a difference. When you come home from that, how do you take care of yourself?
I like to read and I like to spend time with my boys. I have two kids, just play board games all the time. They're my stress reliever.
How wonderful.
Yeah, I'm learning. I have a teenager and I'm learning other language. I don't even know. Like some terms like that, that's, I don't know. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. But there's like, you know, they're like slang words that we're like, is that even a word?
Something to take you out of the deep thoughts and all of the something fun, something light with your family. And it, yeah, sometimes it's just learning a new language, learning teenage slang, which is its own language.
Yes, it's learning the new generation. Yes.
Hopefully, after everyone listens to this podcast, they're able to get a real understanding of the value and the beauty and the specialness of what long-term care and subacute care have to offer. So thank you so much, Anne, for taking the time to share with us all of your insights, all of your wisdom. Thank you for enlightening us about some of the finer points of long-term care and the role of being a DON. Very much appreciated this conversation, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for this time and opportunity. I appreciate everybody. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time on the Nursing Insights Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by the New Jersey Collaborating Center for Nursing and the Rutgers School of Communication and Information.